Welcome to Survival Horror. This is Resident Evil on It's So Bad. Well, hello, Matt. How are you today?
I'm splendid.
You're doing okay?
Yes.
That's good.
Yes. I've survived Resident Evil.
You survived Resident Evil?
Yes.
How are you today, Mike? It's pretty good. It's been a while since you've been here on the podcast.
The last one I did was...
I don't even remember.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've ranked something.
Let's look down the
list.
We
did the 2017 patient.
Oh yeah, gamer we did the 2017 the patient gamer guides. Yes. So
yeah, the list has grown significantly since I've been here.
Yes. Have you seen the list?
I'm seeing it now for the first time.
Well, for people who aren't here in the room with us, we have a thing called the Endless List, and that's what we're doing these podcasts for. We add a new game to the list every episode, and this episode we're going to be talking about Resident Evil. And if you enjoy this, you can follow us on Twitter at itsobadpod, or on, if you want to email us, it's at itsobadpod, or itsobadpod@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play, and where you can get all of your podcasts. It's not Spotify as well. But Matt, what have you been playing?
Besides Resident Evil, I've been playing Exapunks.
Exapunks, yes. They talk about that on Giant Bomb a lot.
Yeah, that's
they
how
blow
I
blow that game.
That's kind of how I've heard about it. I forget Zachtronics. I had never played any of his other games.
Yeah.
It's heard like of Opus it, no. Magnum and Shenzai-io or something like that. It's a lot of fun. I don't know how. So I have like a bit of a assembly programming background.
Right.
I have no idea how you play that game if you don't know anything about programming.
Exapunks?
Yeah.
It's all about making loops, right?
And right. Yeah, but it's not as intuitive as like a Python or a easier right. language. I mean, I don't know. The problems are difficult. They're very like academic kind of problems.
They give you like PDFs in that game where you can go through and learn code essentially.
Right, yeah. So the way it works is it's tied in the story, but you're given PDFs of a zine.
Yeah.
Because the game's set in 1997, I think.
Weird.
And so I printed out the zine. So I have like a physical paper kind of thing to reference. And the tutorials are good, but you need to take it upon yourself to kind of look through the rest of the reference material in the book or the zine. And
so I watched like a little bit of a playthrough, but essentially what you're doing is there's like a robot and you have to program the robot to do something.
Yeah, you can create, I think that's what the exas are.
Yeah, right.
And they're kind of like individual threads that can like replicate themselves or pick up and manipulate files and things like that. And it's all sort of emulating or mimicking like you trying to hack into this network or
right
file system.
Yeah, and it slowly scales up, but it seems like it's super complex. So you have to like, the first thing you have to do is code for this exa to go move into a separate room and pick up a file.
Right.
And then you have to go and move around these like obstacles or whatever, and it has to run like 50 times or whatever.
Yeah, 100 times, and they're all kind of like, you know, somewhat random scenarios that test your code so that it's not unique to a certain solution, that it's kind of adaptable to whatever
kind
of corner cases.
How deep are you into this?
I'm still in the first scene. I think there are two, but I'm nearing the end of it. I don't know, maybe like 5 or 6 hours into it.
Does it get incredibly complex? code you're writing?
So, well, it can be kind of as complex as you want to go for it. Like, you can brute force a lot of things, and then you're less efficient, or you're using too many X's. And what's cool is they kind of set a limit as to, you know, how efficient or, you know, how small your instruction set has to be. And if you're within that limit, then you qualify to, when you beat the level, you show up, like, on a leaderboard.
Yeah.
And it shows a histogram of, like, you know, this is where you know, your code is here, X amount of people got the code this much more efficient or whatever. So it's cool to kind of like redo levels and make your code better and faster and with fewer X's.
Yeah.
So it's cool to like, you know, replay levels, but the story attached to it is also pretty neat.
It's about the guy as being slowly taken over to turn into a cyborg or something.
Right. Yeah. There's one level pretty early on where, you know, you're doing all these things where you're hacking stuff and you need to leave no trace. It's like kill your code before you're done with it.
Yeah.
And then you do a part where you're hacking like a nerve in your arm, and the rules change where, like, you know, you're not hacking and leaving no trace. You can leave X's behind that are constantly then like translating from a nerve ending to your blood pressure or something, you know, vice versa. To like, you know,
this game sounds like I kind of want to play it just because
it's pretty
fun.
The music is also super, super good.
It sounds so daunting that I'm like, probably not going to play this game, yeah. But
it's very fun.
I, on the opposite end of the spectrum, I've been playing Spider-Man for PS4.
Okay. Cool.
And it is not that.
Not.
It is very simple. You mash a button and it hurts bad guys. I will say that there's some interesting parts. You get like web shooter weapons where you can tie people to walls, and there's combos you can do. God of War.
Do you have Web Blossom? Isn't, I've heard that that's like the kind of OP.
I don't have it yet. Have Impact Webbing. I have two because I just played like 2 hours.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I haven't played it yet.
And I was like dicking around for like an hour where you can get it. There's a ton of collectibles.
Right.
And collectibles allow you to build new suits. And I was like, oh shit, I love these suits. Because like one of the first suits you can get is the Scarlet Spider suit, which is the clone of Spider-Man, which is the shit from the 90s that I was so down for.
Hmm.
It was basically Spider-Man had a clone, and it went on for like ever. And this one clone was this guy named Ben. I forget his last name, but he had like a chronic condition, and he was homeless. And he just wore like a red suit with a hoodie that had no sleeves.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, it was dope. Before. It was a dope costume.
And they all add like different abilities too, right?
Yeah, all the costumes add different abilities. But you can, well, the thing is, you can wear anything you want, and you can just add that new ability to the suit that you're wearing.
Oh, cool.
So as you unlock suits, you get a new ability, but you can change the abilities on every suit.
Yeah, once you've unlocked it.
So it's pretty cool. I've heard the story is really good if you like Marvel and Spider-Man, so I'm kind of excited for that.
So it sounds like you have been a Spider-Man fan for a while.
So I was like...
Or you know the lore.
Yeah, I was deep into Spider-Man in like the late 90s, early 2000s. The comic books and the movies were always really good, except for Spider-Man 3 and the Amazing Spider-Man series and Venom and... Wait. So there's some good movies. But yeah, so I do like Spider-Man. New Spider-Man incarnation on this big screen is also something I'm down for. So
right, yeah, the new animated movie.
Oh, I saw that.
Is that what you're talking about?
No, I was talking about Homecoming in the...
Right.
But Into the Spider-Verse is really cool, too. So
I'll get around to it eventually.
It was a good movie. Good soundtrack, so...
Cool.
So that's what I've been playing. Also started up playing Dragon Warrior for the NES, which is...
That's... Dragon Quest?
Dragon Quest 1.
It's the same game, right?
Yeah. They just changed the name for the US for some reason, and then they changed it back. But this is like the most basic of basic JRPGs. You have to save a princess, kill a dragon, and you grind. You get like the first weapon, the second weapon, the third weapon, and there's armor slots. And it's convoluted. It's actually not convoluted. I want to say it's cryptic.
Oh, okay.
Super cryptic. But it's not as cryptic as, like, Metroid.
Or The Legend of Zelda.
It's probably about as cryptic as The Legend of Zelda.
Okay.
The problem with those games back in the day is the people who worked on translations sucked.
Oh, right.
So there's a lot of stuff that's like...
A hint isn't as always helpful as it should be.
Yeah, but there's a lot more hints than Legend of Zelda. Because there's like cities. There's a lot of cities.
Oh, so there's dial, you know, you're talking to townspeople.
Talking
to
townspeople and tell you what to kind of do. And the map isn't so big where you can get super lost.
Is it random encounters and then you go into like a separate turn-based
combat? Yeah, so it's random encounters and... It's turn-based combat where one monster will appear in the center and there's like a dialogue screen that comes up. And as you hit fight, there's like a scrolling list of dialogue that keeps going on the bottom.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so it's...
like during the fight.
Yeah, I mean, so it says like, you hit for 5 damage, and he blocked, and he... whatever. And the best is that the spells are all named really, really basic. So I've only got,
like,
I think...
fire?
No. More basic than that. So there's heal.
Oh, okay.
And there's hurt. Hurt. And then there's, if you want the upgraded version, as you get levels, you get more spells. And the upgraded versions are heal more.
Oh, wow.
And hurt more.
Oh, God.
So
there's not like elemental stuff.
No. Okay. This is like the basic of basic stuff. So there's not even other party members. It's just you.
Oh, it's just you.
Yeah.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, that kind of makes the slow equipment gathering more manageable because you're not trying to kid out.
The only thing that sucks is like the it costs so much gold, and you get like 2 or 3 gold from each encounter. And the, where I am at my level, you get probably like 5 to 10 gold per encounter, and you have to save up like 800 gold to get the complete set. So it sucks. It's just grind.
That sounds like a game that's perfect for if you play it on an emulator or whatever, you can kind of speed up.
Oh yeah.
Like fast forward.
Well, this actually so that you can, there's text options to change the speed of the text.
Oh, okay.
So you can make the text go super fly super fast, which is nice for a game that's that old. They have that option in there. But still, it takes fucking forever to grind. And the death penalty. So if you die, it's not like Final Fantasy where you go to your last save.
Mm-hmm.
If you die, you go back to the starting point of the game, which is never really hard to get to, but you lose half your gold.
Oof.
So if you keep pushing, it's like a gamble every time. If you go into a dungeon and you're like, I don't have enough magic to heal, I don't have items, then I have to back out and somehow get out to the surface.
And I assume you can't recover. It's not like you drop the gold and then can go pick it up.
No,
it's just gone.
No, it's just gone. So that was a big innovation for that game, is that it wasn't like Final Fantasy or other RPGs where you had to go back to the save point. They just took half your gold. So that was the big deal of Dragon Quest. But.
I will probably never play that game. So.
Yeah, I'm gonna grind through it. It's definitely, it's like, it should be called Grind the Video Game.
Right.
But yes, we are here today to talk about a game called Resident Evil. We are adding, for the first time ever, we have 18 games on our endless list. There are 0 PlayStation games.
Oh.
No PlayStation 1 games, no PlayStation 2 games. There's games that appeared on PlayStation 3, and PlayStation 4, but no, like, games that are known for the Sony brand, the PlayStation, and this game. Resident Evil was one of the first popular PlayStation 1 games. Came out in March of 1996. The PlayStation came out in September of 1995. Do you remember the release of the PlayStation?
I remember when it came out. I was a little young. I was 6 years old when it came out.
I had a young guy.
I had a Super Nintendo and a Nintendo 64. We did get a PlayStation, and I know I got an early PlayStation because for the entire time I had a PlayStation, I had like the old optical drive or whatever on the CD reader.
Okay.
And so what would happen is if you had a very...
Oh, you had to turn it upside down?
Or if you just had a really tiny scratch on it, the game was like unplayable, and it would get stuck at a loading screen.
Right.
And so I would constantly have to go back to Electronics Boutique and like convince them to let me get a new copy, and they would look at it and say, this is fine. And eventually they started asking what model PlayStation I had, and
oh, really?
The jig was up. And
yeah, you had to get a new one.
Yeah.
I actually had to buy a new PlayStation 2, my third one, because the shit the bed, it wouldn't play certain games. So I'm still dealing with that. PlayStation.
Yeah, Metal Gear Solid was really the game that made me want to get a PlayStation. That and the first Medal of Honor.
I'm pretty sure that was 97, was Metal Gear Solid.
Right. And I don't remember when if Medal of Honor was before that.
Or, it was right around then. It might have been 1998. Right. So.
And Resident Evil 2. I had never played 1.
Resident Evil 2 was 97, yeah. too. So, me too. I didn't care about PlayStation at all until, like, Resident Evil started getting going. Mm-hmm. And I remember people talking about Resident Evil, but I really got... I got a PlayStation to play Resident Evil 2.
Right.
Originally. And I played through that game. And then I don't think I ever went back to the first Resident Evil because I heard it was just so difficult to slog through.
Even when I was, like, you know, 8 years old or whatever, I remember looking at the box of Resident Evil, and didn't it come in, like, the larger?
Long box. Yeah.
But I remember looking at it and seeing, you know, after having played 2, looking at it and saying, this just looks not anywhere near as good. I don't know if I ever want to go back and play this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the graphics were as good, and it the game was seemed... From an outsider who never played the game before, it seemed like it was much more esoteric and cryptic because they had, you were in a mansion and you had to escape a mansion. It didn't sound as exciting as going into a city.
Right, yeah.
And I think that kind of turned me off from it. But I will say, so this Resident Evil, the first one that came out in March of 1996, it was really one of the first like standout PlayStation titles. Before that, you had games that were a lot of ports and a lot of... like arcade or PC games that were ported over to it. So like you had Doom come out on PlayStation. You had Destruction Derby was a big one that I was known for originally. I remember that being a big PlayStation game.
Was Gran Turismo at least the first one was probably out by then?
It might have been, or it was right around the same time as Resident Evil. Mm-hmm. But like Revolution X and NBA Jam were all ported to the PlayStation. Air Combat came out before it, which would become Ace Combat.
Yeah, I remember those games. Those were...
But no, like
when did Final Fantasy VII come out?
1997, I believe.
Okay, so
yeah, it was after. So it like really blew up when Resident Evil 2 came out, and when Resident Evil came out, people were like, "Oh man, this is a mature system compared to the N64." But
it was it was like a different breed of Japanese games too. Whereas like Nintendo always had, you know, they were a lot of Japanese games, but they're all Nintendo games,
right?
And Sega was kind of the same thing. You'd get, you know, specific Sega games, but to see Sony produced Japanese games, it was a different, I don't know.
Different beast, yes. Different type of culture. It's actually, it's developed by Capcom and published by Capcom. And it's funny, we just did an episode on Mega Man 2. The director or the producer of Mega Man 2 directed this game or produced this game.
Oh, cool.
His name's Tokaru Fujiwara. He made Ghosts and Goblins, Bionic Commando, all the NES Mega Mans, 1 through 6. And he also made a game called Sweet Home, which was an NES game, which is what they originally wanted to make Resident Evil a remake of.
Oh.
So Sweet Home is based on a movie in Japan, and it's about like a haunted mansion. I've never seen the movie, but I really want to play the NES game because it's more like an RPG-y type thing.
Is it zombies too?
Yeah, it's zombies, but it's all like ghosts, and there's a lot of different supernatural elements in the game. I don't really know too many specifics. I've seen screenshots. It's top down where it's more like a Final Fantasy RPG thing. You have four people in your party. Mm-hmm. You have to find items.
Oh, okay.
And you have an inventory where you have to use the items to solve puzzles.
Is it fantasy or do you have guns and stuff?
I don't know. I don't know that specifically. But the director of this game is also, his name is Shinji Mikami. You might have heard of him. Because he also directed the Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3. He did Resident Evil Code Veronica, Resident Evil 4, Dino Crisis. He did Beautiful Joe, Killer 7, God Hand, The Evil Within.
It's a good resume.
Yeah, he's the director of the first Resident Evil. And he also directed Goof Troop.
I love Goof Troop. I just learned... I knew that I loved a goofy game.
Yeah.
And I did not know what it was called for the longest time because I rented it from like the grocery store when I was little.
Basically Legend of Zelda Link to the Past. That's co-op.
Yeah. I mean, having a little brother, it was amazing to be able to play that kind of game.
Right.
Two player.
So Goof Troop, he also directed Who Framed Roger Rabbit for the NES.
Okay. So. Didn't know that they had a game for that.
Really?
No, yeah.
I don't know if it's a classic. It's kind of an infamous game, I guess.
I can't imagine what it looked like on an NES, like how they tried to capture...
Kind of like Legend of Zelda 2. okay. where there's like a top-down Toontown that you have to go through.
Okay.
And there's buildings throughout. And
was it a platformer or?
No, it's more like a kind of a detective game.
Oh.
Or like a Metroidvania.
Hmm.
It's kind of like Legend of Zelda 2, where okay. you have to you go into buildings, you talk to people, you learn clues, and then you have to solve the crime.
Right.
And then Roger Stone goes to jail because he looks like...
Roger Stone?
Yes, oh. the detective, the bad guy in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I didn't know he was named Roger Stone. It's...
No. He, you know Roger Stone, Fall in the Noose?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought...
The bad guy, Judge Doom, in...
Oh, looks like Roger Stone. Okay,
That was a long walk for a cold drink of water, if you will. No one got that. Great, good joke, Mike. But what, so what games in the Resident Evil franchise have you played?
I played 2, 3, and Code Veronica a bunch.
Yeah.
I loved all three of those games. I had never played Resident Evil 1, like I mentioned earlier. I tried to play Resident Evil 4 3 times. The first time I tried to play it was on the Wii.
Wait, whoa. What is holding you up from playing that game? That, like, legit, if I'm looking at this list that we have right now, that probably goes on top. Resident Evil 4 is, like, a really, really good game.
So, I'm a defender of tank controls. I'm a defender of fixed camera angles.
Oh, boy.
I'm a defender of, like, very limited ammo and, you know, the ink ribbons and everything like that. And I know some of that's in 4. It's just this... What is it, Spain? Four takes place in? Just the whole setting, and it's just not...
Matalos!
It's not what I'm looking for.
I've beaten that...
If it wasn't called Resident Evil 4, I probably would like it more.
Maybe. Did you ever play 5 or 6?
I never played 5 or 6. I played all the Dino Crisis games.
Did you play 7 yet?
No, not yet. I started the remake last night.
The Resident Evil 2 remake?
2, yeah, 2 remake.
Yeah, I mean, Resident Evil 2 remake looks like it's fucking phenomenal. And actually... This is like the first time I think this podcast has ever been topical because
right.
yeah. we're going to put this out on Tuesday, which is the same week the Resident Evil 2 remake comes out. Amazing.
Good job, Mike.
We did it.
But yeah, I liked the more traditional Resident Evil games.
Yeah.
So I loved this game.
Okay.
And I'm glad I waited to play it, you know, the latest sort of PC version. But yeah, for whatever reason, I bounced off of 4 every time I tried it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the first... the first game I got for PlayStation was Resident Evil 2. And surprisingly, like, I think that was one of my turning points. And I've talked about this on the podcast before. Like, before I was like... When this game came out, I was like 13, right? Or when I probably got to play Resident Evil 2, I was like 13, 14. Right. Before that, I, like, never beat games.
Oh, okay.
Ever.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 2 was one of the first games I beat.
It probably was for me, too.
Yeah.
I can't think of what I could have beaten before. I mean, I beat, like, Super Mario World.
Goof Troop. And
stuff. Goof Troop, yeah. but yeah, this is certainly the most mature game. Or 2 was the most kind of, like, you know, complex and mature game I've beat.
So I beat Resident Evil 2. I remember I got Resident Evil 3 for Christmas, and I beat that game. That game was...
I love that game.
I love that game too, but it's so much more straightforward. It kind of takes away from it now looking back.
Yeah.
I've beaten Resident Evil 4 more times than I can count. I think the last time I beat it was like 2 years ago, and I've probably beat it twice in sitting through. Because when you run through it, you get to keep all the items in your inventory.
Oh, it's like a new game plus
kind of thing. Yeah, so that's...
Well, having a lot of... I know 3 had something like that where you would unlock...
Yeah, and you'd unlock the Umbrella guys playthrough.
And you get like a... Wouldn't you get like a... rocket launcher or something with when you'd play as them, you'd get like better weapons. I think 2 had something similar.
2 had 2 different playthroughs, and they had Hunk was a playthrough,
and Tofu was another.
Was like the ultimate if you beat it a certain amount of time.
I tried Hunk. I never did the Tofu thing.
No,
I think Tofu you only have a knife, right?
Yes. I never played 5, never played 6 or 7. 5 just for some reason didn't do it for me. I don't know if it looks like the blatant racism was.
Yeah, is 5 in Africa?
Yeah.
It's like a co-op one?
Yeah, there's some shit that goes down in that game that looks real weird.
I blur 5 and 6 kind of. I can't differentiate the two in my mind.
5 is like, it's a very bright game. It's right, like set. Yeah. And then 6 is like bounces all over the place and looks more like 4.
Okay.
6 like is, you're in Japan, you're in North America. Okay. Yeah, it's weird.
And I must have just completely ignored 6 when it came out.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, and I just remember the reviews were not good, so right. I just didn't play it.
7, I want to play 7. It looks pretty scary. Part of me wants to just get like a wait and get a PSVR and try and play it through that.
I just, that game was not my
favorite. Oh, you tried it? You've played it?
No, I have not played it. Just watching people play it, I'm like, oh, this is too scary. It's
pretty scary, yeah.
No, this is too much for me. I can't do that.
I think first person was a game changer. The fact that you don't see what's behind you,
yeah,
and you can turn around and anything can be behind you adds a new element of...
The Resident Evil 2 remake is third person, right?
Third person, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I can't do that first person shit. Especially when they like come through walls at you and stuff, and they're chopping off your hand and stuff. It's gross. I don't want to do that. It just looks bad. But let's this game, Resident Evil, as I said, it was intended to be a remake of Sweet Home originally. It took 3 years to develop, so it was originally, they didn't know what platform they were going to put it out on, and they weren't developing it for a specific platform, but they eventually went with the PlayStation, because that was the period when they didn't know if the PlayStation was going to be a Nintendo thing.
Right.
Because they were supposed to be CD-ROM based, and then they went to cartridge, and then Sony split off from Nintendo, and they had that whole affair, but Nintendo was supposed to put out a Sony CD-ROM system.
Oh, that's like the thing that you see occasionally online, that like people have found one in like an attic or...
Yeah,
like,
and then they split off and they made their own thing. The design of the mansion was influenced or inspired by the Overlook Hotel.
Oh, that makes sense.
And he also cites Lucio Fulci's movie Zombie. I don't know if you... Are you familiar with, like, Italian horror cinema? Nope. But it's, like, super, super influential movies from, like, the 70s. Lucio Fulci made, like, a ton of horror movies that were really super fucking gory.
And there's one called Zombie.
It's like... I gotta check that out. It's called Zombie without the E, I think, Italian version is. But yeah, it's hard to find.
Zombie.
A bippity boppity. Yeah, we are paisan, so yes. So you played as, who'd you play
My
as?
My girl Jill.
Jill.
Jill
Valentine.
You know, it's funny, having not played one, I didn't even know that there was an option to, you know, choose different characters. I always assumed you play as Chris. I didn't even know you could play as Jill.
Oh, I thought you just played as Jill. That's why I played as Chris this time.
Oh, I did play as Jill. It's just I didn't know until I actually played the game that you could choose. Yeah, I had to pick Jill because I always played as Jill in Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
Yeah.
And just, it's a cool character, and I don't know. I didn't even know that they were, you know, actually different until you had mentioned that.
So they're, like, minorly different. The support characters are different. So if you play as Jill, you get Barry as your support guy.
Right, but don't you get an extra inventory as well?
So that's, I think, the two differences. So
and she gets a lockpick.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
What does Chris get?
He gets nothing.
Oh, he doesn't even get a lockpick.
No, it's terrible.
Oh, damn.
So there's, like, a door without a handle that you can't get through unless you have the lockpick, I think.
Is that the same door with the doorknob? Like, that break? Oh, yeah, you fix it and... Right. Barry fixed it for me.
Yeah, Barry did not fix it for me. So I had
to... Barry was useless. I'm surprised Barry made it into Stars. That dude is...
Rebecca also was useless, and, well, she's not that useless. You don't see Rebecca at all in your playthrough. She sits in...
Is she a part of STARS? Is that...
Yeah, yeah. Okay. She's like a rookie. She's actually the protagonist of Resident Evil Zero.
Oh, I've never... Yeah, I didn't play... Is Zero the one on the train?
Yeah, and okay. it's the GameCube one. It's, right. I think it came out for GameCube. The other GameCube one, because Resident Evil 4 was a GameCube one, too.
Right.
But she will sit in item box rooms and save rooms.
Oh.
And one of them, and she'll heal you a certain amount of times.
Ooh, that's cool.
A couple times a game. So there's two different points in the game where she does that.
That's kind of nice, because with the limited inventory, you're probably carrying around less herbs as...
Yes. I had to go run out to get herbs, run back in, drop them off. That brings up a good point, though. So one of the things... So there's a limitation. You have 6 slots in Chris Redfield's playthrough, and Jill Valentine has 8 slots. So that's one of the ways this game was designed around was inventory management. So you have a very limited number of amount of ammo in this game. You have a limited number of save ribbons. So if you want to save, you have to actually find an ink ribbon, and they're on the ground, and you have a limited number throughout the game.
And you have to find a typewriter.
And you have to find a typewriter to actually do the saving. Yeah. And they kept that through until, I think, 4, and then 5, I think they changed it.
Oh, okay.
So you...
And they're, I think they're cassette tapes in 7, so it's a similar kind of thing. Yeah,
and they brought them back, I think, in Resident Evil 2 Remake.
So I was disappointed to discover that in the 2 Remake, if you play on normal, it just autosaves.
Oh.
So you have to play on hardcore to get do the whole ink ribbon typewriter thing. And to me, that's like
Resident Evil.
That's Resident Evil.
Yeah, that's weird.
So now I'm tempted to, do I have to start this game over and play on the hardest difficulty? So that's a dilemma I'm dealing with now.
Yeah, that's a tough decision to play there.
You know, it's not the same.
Did you ever
autosave?
Did you ever reach a point where you were going to run out of ink ribbons?
I did run out of ink ribbons a couple times. Wow. I mean, you know, so... When you're not playing, you know, sometimes I'd hop in and play for, you know, a half hour. And I don't want to lose that progress.
No, right. I mean, me with a child, I have very little time. So I'm saving all the fucking time.
Right. So there were times where I was a little wasteful with my ink ribbons. I never totally ran out, but there was one stretch where I played on a Saturday for like 4 hours and never found an ink ribbon.
Oh, boy.
And I was so nervous. It was the part towards, I guess, the second, third, where you're going out into the backyard to the cabin.
Oh, fuck that.
And then you have to fight the guy in the chains in the cabin.
Lisa Trevor, you mean. That's not a guy. That's a girl.
That's a woman? Yes. Oh, okay. Well, so I'm fighting Lisa Trevor. And
fuck Lisa Trevor, by the way.
That's where I got, finally, the ink ribbon and thankfully was able to save. Because I think if I died and lost all that progress, I might not have finished this game.
Yeah. Did you find the Magnum in the tombstone?
I did, yeah. I found the Magnum back, but I guess there was a subplot or something with Lisa Trevor. Like, I was supposed to find out more about her. I never did that.
Yeah. So there's...
Is that the door underneath the staircase?
Yes.
So how... I don't know if I ever... I thought I went through there. Maybe I'm misremembering. What do you do to find out more about her?
Wait, maybe it's not the door underneath the staircase. There's notes lying around.
Oh, okay.
She, I think, is the landscaper's daughter, and she's, like, tested on and has all these things that happened to her. And there's, like, a room that has a hidden, like, push-away...
like, bookcase kind of thing?
No, there's a room that squashes you.
Right. That's the one where you put the broken shotgun...
No, there's another room that squashes you.
Oh, the one where it closes on the
sides.
Yeah,
and you have to go around the side.
Yeah, right.
And then behind that, there's a hole in the ground. And in that room, in that area, there's a bunch of notes that talk about Lisa Trevor and her dad. And
that connects you back down to the basement, right?
Yeah. And then did you have to kill Lisa Trevor in your playthrough? Because I think that's the difference between Chris and Jill.
So I encountered her in the cabin.
Did you have to push off the statues and
Oh, right. Yes, I did kill her. Yeah.
Okay.
And you have the option there to, I guess you don't do this in Chris's playthrough, but Barry shows up.
Yeah.
And you take the gun from him, I think, and you have the option to give him the gun back or not.
I think, no. Jill also gets grenade launcher, right?
Right, yeah.
Chris doesn't get a grenade launcher.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so there's a lot
that,
of stuff.
That grenade launcher was...
Wesker helps you in that scene in the Chris part. Yeah,
whoa,
yeah.
Okay. Huh, yeah, I had very minimal interactions with Wesker. But yeah, at that point I gave Barry the gun, and I think he, I don't know if he shoots her or what, but she ends up falling off a cliff, I think.
Yeah, you don't get a gun from Wesker in that scene. I think he might give you ammo. He might be like, here, and tosses ammo on the ground or something. But yeah, that part wasn't too hard for the Chris part. But yeah, that...
Well, it was. I had a grenade launcher, so I was able to... I think I was able to just blow her up a couple times.
Oh, yeah. That would be nice. Yeah. I forget. So Chris gets the flamethrower.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
But you have to return it instantly.
Oh.
So Chris, once you're outside of the cabin and then you go to the other part that's outside, where did you fight the spiders in the spider pit?
Spiders in the spider pit.
Okay.
I don't think so. Oh, I fought spiders, but I don't remember a spider pit.
Yeah, there's a pit with spiders where there's you have to push rolling log, the tunnel needs to change to open a door.
Right, yeah, with a crank.
Yeah, and then there's a room filled with spiders.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
But you probably didn't go there because you need to lift up the flamethrower and then it opens the door. And then to get out of the room, you have to put the flamethrower back on.
Oh, back in. Oh.
So it's like you have it for literally 20 minutes. Yeah. It's stupid.
Oh, that's funny, because I would think that you would then be able to use that in lieu of the kerosene and the lighter.
No, because you don't keep it. You have to return it to open a door.
Huh.
Because there's a part where you're running away from Lisa Trevor.
You know what? I remember the flamethrower, but I don't ever remember using it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
But yeah. It's been a little bit since I played this game. It's been about a month. I'm trying to remember everything.
Which version did you play? Did you play the PlayStation version?
Yeah, I played the PS4 version, which I think is just a remake of the GameCube version.
So that added what are they called? The Crimson Heads, right? Didn't
they
the
were in, the re- no, not, they were in the game.
Not
game.
In the place, the OG PlayStation
They
version.
Were not.
Yeah.
They were. Are you sure?
I'm almost positive. I think the first remake added, the GameCube one added the Crimson Heads. And that was, I think, I can't imagine playing the game without that. I thought that added a whole extra layer of depth to navigating.
So there was a ton of differences between, this game has come out multiple times.
Right.
Most recently, there was a PS4 version that came out with Resident Evil 0, but it was remade in 2002, 2003 for the GameCube.
Yeah.
But before that, in 1997, a year after Resident Evil's release, they made the director's cut.
Right.
And what that did was that changed some of the items' locations. The handgun can randomly decapitate zombies, which it didn't in the original version.
I didn't know that. That's funny.
It also added an easy mode with less difficult enemies and ammunition, more ammunition, and it had auto-aim.
Oh, interesting.
So, the version I played had auto-aim, but...
Yeah. When you say auto-aim, you mean where if you held up the gun, they'd kind of turn a little bit? Or was it beyond that?
No, so... Oh, okay. Yeah, so if you play the original 1996 version, and you aim the gun, it doesn't aim automatically at the enemy. You have to slowly rotate yourself. One thing to note about this game and the first three Resident Evil games for people who might be a bit younger is that this game had tank controls. What are tank controls, you might ask? Tank controls are when you press... you didn't have an analog stick. There were no analog sticks in 1996 for the PlayStation. So if you press the directional pad, the D-pad, and you pressed it left or right, the character would turn to the left and the right. The camera's fixed, so it's not you're not moving relative to where you are on the screen. Mm-hmm. So you're not pressing up to move up. What happens is when you press left or right, you turn the character, and if you press up, you move forward as the character. And you press back, you move backwards. And it is super not intuitive.
Dude, I started the remake with their default controls or whatever.
Yeah.
Played 2 seconds and immediately had to go in the options and put it back to regular...
The tank controls?
Tank controls. I think the tank controls are totally fine.
Oh, people love the game, so they have to be fine.
I think they're perfect for the fixed camera. And I think the sluggishness kind of adds to the drama of,
Yeah, I think that is the case, yes. I'll agree, but also tank controls blow, and they're largely unintuitive.
Do you...
I will say also, though, if you play with the analog stick in modern games, when the camera moves and you're holding a certain direction, and then the camera moves and you go relative to where the camera is,
yeah, exactly,
it makes it incredibly hard.
Right, that's why the tank controls were nice. You just keep holding forward.
Yeah, because you're not moving... Because now you move relative to the camera, so... If you want to go up, you move towards that direction on the screen, which is different from tank controls. You're moving relative to the character.
I did hear that the new, if you use the new controls, like what do you call them, analog
controls? Yeah, analog stick
control. It is a lot easier to like bob and weave between the zombies.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think I'm very grateful that they had a like quick turn, like the 180, because I feel like without that, you tank controls just wouldn't fly.
But. Right. So there are some differences between the North American and the Japanese version, the original version, because they always would try to make things harder for the U.S. back in the day, because we had rentals.
Blockbuster.
Yeah, right. So Japan didn't have rentals. They were illegal. So what they did for the U.S. version is, the original version, they disabled the auto-aiming. Auto-aiming was on in the Japanese version. Hmm. They lowered the number of ink ribbons, and what they wanted to do... But they tested it, and they were like, this fucking blows. They wanted to make the item boxes not interconnected.
Ooh. That would, yeah, so that would be pretty brutal.
So the item boxes are these random boxes that are in these rooms where you can save, generally. There are some that aren't, but you can you have a limited number of inventory, so you can put stuff into the item box for later use.
Yeah, storage, yeah.
So what they wanted to do was, and those item boxes are all connected, and what they wanted to do was take away that connection so that you had to traverse the entire fucking mansion to go back to a point. And it's just makes the game, like, would make the game so terrible. Already with six inventory slots, it was almost unmanageable. I was
like, right, yeah.
This is bad.
As I could see as Jill with the extra item slots, it not being too bad. It would kind of be nice if they offered that as like one of the extra kind of hard New Game Plus modes.
So what's your most memorable part of this game for you?
The most memorable part, so the thing that you know, kind of gave me flashbacks to playing 2 when I was younger is anytime you traverse through a hallway with the windows,
oh yeah,
and like the dogs would jump through,
right?
And, you know, shit like that.
So in Chris's playthrough, the dogs don't jump through.
Oh really?
The glass shatters. And it never, it cracks.
Never comes through.
Nothing, never comes through. But there is the next room after that, like really late in the game, mm-hmm. will just be invaded by zombies.
Oh,
okay. By like 5 zombies. Oh. So that's fun.
Honestly, you know, one of my favorite parts of the game is like getting to a save room for the first time.
Yeah.
And like hearing the music change and like the relief.
The calm music
that
they have.
The music is so perfect in the typewriter rooms. It's just, you can chill, you know, you know you're safe, you know.
Until you get to Lisa Trevor's cabin and you're like, motherfucker.
Right, yeah.
That was a scary part.
Terrifying, yes. Not knowing that was happening.
Yes. They subvert tropes sometimes. So what they'll do is they'll like lead you to believe that you're safe, right?
Right.
So you go into an area and you're like, oh, the music's changing, this is fine. And then they do something like that makes it not fine. Or like the dogs through the windows.
The windows, yeah.
You're like going through this hallway 500 times because you have to keep going back and forth. And then all of a sudden zombies come in. So they do it a couple times. I mean, even when you kill guys, if you don't know that if you didn't take...
Oh, the blood... usually can see the blood pool to know that they're actually dead.
Or if there's no blood pool, if there is the blood pool and you don't burn them, they'll come back.
Right, yeah.
So.
Yeah, that, yeah, it's nice that Resident Evil in general, but specifically this game, has, like, rules.
You know,
there are certain rules to zombies and there's certain rules to, like, oh, okay, like, I feel pretty safe now, but you're right, then they, like, break a rule every once in a while.
Right.
I wish at one point they had found a way when you're opening a door.
They do that in two. They definitely do that in two.
Is that like the first time you see a liquor or something?
No. It's just like, but when you open the door, a zombie comes through.
It comes through. Yeah. I wish they had done that in one. Maybe there was, you know, a technical limitation or whatever. But
that's also a thing that they do. They do that to build tension, right?
Right, yeah.
They're loading an area, but they specifically make you go through doors so that when you open it, there's like a chance that you could build tension. And the whole game is centered around camera angles, very specific camera angles, right, to make you only see certain things.
Yep. And you can hear things that you can't see.
Yeah, it's all done directorially. There's one room that has like an L-shaped hallway where there's mirrors and you can see zombies in the mirrors.
Yeah, you can see around the mirrors.
And you're like, oh shit, there's a zombie right there. So that in that room in my playthrough, there was one Crimson Head that I never dealt
with.
I was like, oh god, every time I have to go through that, I was like, oh my god, I have to dodge and weave.
The big advantage to Jill was that I basically always had a lighter and kerosene in those two extra slots.
Did not.
Thankfully, I was always able to kind of get rid of the Crimson Heads. But the first time I saw one, it was terrifying.
Yeah. Fucking Crimson Heads. They're bad. I will say, they're scary. I think they're actually scarier than the, like, Swamp Thing monster creatures that come out at the end.
Yeah, for sure.
Because those things are just, like, normal like monsters that will swipe at you, but Crimson Heads are like these like scary fast moving things.
But and they do look different, but it takes a couple times to actually recognize them differently.
Right.
So a lot of times you'll walk into a room and, you know, you see one lying on the ground and, you know, it pops up.
Right.
And you think it's following the normal zombie rules, and then it obviously doesn't. I think that's one thing the game does really well, is that you constantly are going, at least in the first third, you're going through these rooms and you either kill the zombie or there's just a zombie laying there. And you know eventually one time you're going to walk over that zombie and it's going to get up.
Yes.
But, you know, it takes the sixth or seventh time you get through that room. You can't do anything about it. Yeah, you're just waiting.
So there's one at like the bottom of the staircase that's just there all the time.
Right.
You can't burn it and you're just waiting for it to get up. And you're like, God damn it, get up.
It's the one right by the save room underneath the stairs.
Yeah. That's one of the rooms where Rebecca heals you for a while.
Is that the same room with the doorknob?
No, that's on the other side of the house.
Okay. I think the doorknob thing is super cool. The fact that they had
you can only go through one way.
One way, and then it breaks after you do it three or four times.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so you know it's going to break like the next time you use it. And you're like, all right, you know, I can survive going around the long route this time.
If you think about this game, it's super interesting. Game came out in 1996, right? And there's like a progression that you work through where you're going exactly where they want you to go.
Yeah, it's very directed.
Yes, and it's...
Or choreographed.
And it's not super, super cryptic. There are some things that are difficult, some puzzles.
Right.
But generally, you find an item and there's a spot for that item to go.
Right.
So you just have to find where that item is.
What was the sort of... Did you get stuck on any puzzle at any point?
There was one puzzle, and it was reworked for the PS4 version, and I still, I guess I just didn't see the other side, or I might have got it, but there was the crow hallway with the lights where you turn on the thing and you have to make a certain color.
You go to the end and you see, it's like a stained glass window with like a green crown and a purple
And I understood
necklace.
What to do, I just didn't know on the other side you could change, there was buttons on the other side.
Yeah.
So I was like, what the fuck am I doing wrong here?
I think that's...
But that is actually a puzzle that they remade for the PS4 version.
Because that's a shortcut, and I don't think that shortcut is in... Because when you open it, you have then a door to like the backyard courtyard.
Chris's playthrough, that is not a shortcut.
Oh, it's not.
No.
What do you do when you?
There's because you can't pick that door. There's a locked door at the end of it that goes outside.
So then, what is the purpose of the puzzle?
It gives you like a medallion or something that you can put into something else.
Oh, right. If that's true. I mean, I use that path constantly.
So I had to go all the way the fuck around the mansion. I had to go upstairs and around to the front.
Huh.
And then out the back.
And, well, I guess upstairs and around the front, you're going through that hallway then with the windows.
Yeah.
A bunch. Okay.
And that's where they don't break. Right.
Okay.
So,
I got stuck with the x-ray puzzle at the end where
you
put the x-rays up.
That was difficult.
And turn the red light on, and then you see the different organ, like, you know, the colon right. and the lungs and whatever.
And it has and to then, spell out something.
Yeah, the first letter of each of those things. Like, I could get, I figured out the x-ray part, but I didn't figure out how that translated into
right, that
the
was, password. That was super complicated.
That was the most frustrating part for me.
I will say the story, too, is a little, like... So you get to the very end and then there's just like, you watch a video and Wesker's part of the research staff suddenly and he's like your boss. And the,
he's, so what, he's like a double, he's obviously being he's, paid by
he's
Umbrella
a scientist.
Or whatever. Oh, he is? I thought he was just like the head of the Bravo team of stars or something.
He is, but in the video that you watch, he's like in a lab coat chilling with all the scientists, which is really like out of left field.
Right.
But there's a lot of stuff. I really like the notes because that's another thing where you progress and they lead you around like in a very straightforward path. Or it's not straightforward, but there's like definitely a clear progression.
Right.
In each room that you open up, you learn a little bit more about the story.
Yeah,
and the story is laid out in like a straightforward fashion. It's not like this happened 3 months in the past, this happens 3 months in the future. Mm-hmm. It's like you're going through and you're getting the story in drip feeds.
And it kind of culminates with you in the lab and then you're like, oh, you know, learn all these secrets.
And... Yeah. And I thought when I didn't realize when I, before I played through this, that the lab is like really short part of it.
Right.
It's a very small portion of the mansion. I thought there would be like this big sprawling facility.
Like a whole new floor, essentially. Of
I mean, they did have a giant room with a shark tank for some reason, though. I didn't really understand.
Yeah, what was the purpose of that? Were they doing it on sharks, or...?
I guess, but they were... There was a, also the plant was there. Did you have to fight the plant?
I fought the plant. I did the, you get, you can go and do the chemistry puzzle or whatever. There, where you,
that is not in the Chris
original game.
No,
oh,
in
the Chris
playthrough.
Really? Yeah. Oh, because it's a lockpick door.
No. You go in there and he looks at the chemicals and he goes, "I don't understand a thing about chemicals."
Oh, really?
And I was like, "I know there's a puzzle here."
Yeah, so, that was kind of cool. I figured that one out before I even got the note. I just I must have just deduced that you could.
If you do it wrong, you die.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it makes like mustard gas.
Oh. All right.
But
yeah, I did that and then went and like poured it on the, I guess you have to go down to the basement or the lab again.
Yeah.
And in that one room with all the roots and you use it. And
right.
You and basically don't even need to fight the plant. It just kills the plant.
Oh no, there's a boss fight with the plant in the Chris playthrough.
Right. But you can bypass it with the chemical. In
oh
the
really?
One. Yeah. Just it like automatically kills the plant.
Oh.
And then you go in that room and it just dies.
Oh, so see, when in the Chris playthrough, you have to fight it and you have to shoot it. It's not that hard. You have to just, if you have the Magnum, you can shoot it like 5 times and it dies.
Oh, okay.
So that was pretty easy. Yeah, but it is funny when you go in the chemical room. I'm like sitting there. I'm like, I know I have to do something here, but he's like, I don't understand a thing about chemicals. I bet somebody else understands chemicals. It's like, oh Jesus Christ. And that cabin also sucked too. Cause there was one hole. You have to move the box over.
The plant will come out and grab you.
You have to move a box over it, but I could never line it up perfectly. So no matter.
It would squeeze through.
Like I'd always go. One particular way, he'd always get me. I was like, son of a bitch, every time.
Didn't the box, like, not reset, too?
No, it did.
It did reset every time?
No, it didn't reset. So it stayed in where you pushed it, at least where I was.
But could you screw it up where you could just push it into a position where you're then screwed, and every time you go through, you have to...
I don't know. I never did that, so that's funny. I didn't think about that.
Were there any... So the Magnum was kind of like a hidden weapon.
Right.
Are there other hidden weapons that...
I do not know.
I had mainly used the grenade launcher, like the combat shotgun or whatever.
Yeah.
And the Magnum.
Did you have the regular shotgun too?
Yeah, that's the one where you do the puzzle with the collapsing ceiling.
Yeah. Ah, it might have been a Jill sandwich. That one.
Yeah. Though I don't think he says that in
the remake?
Yeah.
Oh, she doesn't?
I know that cutscene from the original one, but yeah. Because I don't think you see Barry at all. It's Barry's the one that says that, right?
Yes, I think so. One thing we should mention, too, is that this game has some horrible live-action video in the original one.
Yeah.
I went through and I watched all of the cutscenes, and they are really poorly acted.
Apparently Jill was a high school student.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny. That's also weird.
And the credits I saw, too, the credits only credit them by first name. I'm sure you could like go on IMDb yeah, or something definitely. And find it out, but
that is funny.
It's very janky.
Yes, yes. It was very early or mid-90s FMV style.
I wonder how much of that was kind of on purpose to be... Do you think they were trying to be a little...
Hokey?
Campy and...
Probably. I mean, like, because that game is supposed to be campy.
And it can't just... be that bad accidentally.
Right. Maybe you can. We're talking about Japanese video game companies. Yeah. They probably could. But yeah. What else do we have to say here?
So I had the useless Barry. And so what did what's it, Rebecca?
Yeah, Rebecca Chambers.
What does she do besides healing? So does he appear at all, Barry, in your playthrough?
No.
Okay. So how does she...
By the way, now that we're getting towards the end here, did you save Barry? Or did you save Chris?
Yeah, I saved
Chris?
Barry and saved Chris.
Okay. I did the same with how does Rebecca Chris... and Jill.
Oh, so Jill ends up in the prison cell,
yeah.
too?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's never really an explanation as to how that happens, I guess, right?
No.
They just get locked away,
yeah, it's very strange. Right. There's also, like, the really weird... Because Rebecca's, like, young. She, like, comes across as she's, like, a rookie.
Not ready to
be... Yeah, and she's not ready to be there. And, like, he's just like, yeah, I'll see you later. Like, waves to her. He's like, yeah, you know. He's like, thanks. She's like, thanks for saving me, Chris, from that horrible zombie that I just was in. So but I'll see you later.
Is it you, Rebecca, and Wesker in the main lobby initially?
Okay. Yeah.
What happened? So what's his name? Enrico? The dude in the cave where you get the crank, where he's, like, lying on the ground.
He's not in mine.
Oh, because there's a point where... You, I think his name is Enrico. I might be making an...
Oh, yeah.
Where he's, like, lying
on
the ground, and he's like, there's a traitor. And you're talking to him.
Well, there's, like, a bunch of people that are just randomly there, and you're just like, see you later.
Yeah,
bye.
Well, and then someone shoots him, Wesker.
Yeah.
And Jill was like, oh, someone shot him. And she just... That's it.
Yeah, he's in
the... She doesn't, like, chase this guy. Like, isn't it weird that someone appeared from behind her and shot this dude?
Yes, there's a lot... I mean, there's... Oh, like... Wait, hold on. There's also the part with the shark tank where there's Richard who's just chilling in the water with the sharks, and he's...
I don't know if I encountered... Richard is one of, like, another Stars dude?
Yeah, he's just like, oh, you walk in and you go, Richard! And he's like, yeah, hey, how you doing,
Chris? Is he the one that gets bitten by the snake?
No, he's a different guy.
Okay.
And he's just chilling in the water where all the sharks are, and then he gets eaten by the shark because he's just chilling in the same pool.
I don't know if that was in the Jill version. Maybe I just glossed over that detail, but,
the shark was terrible. This is just really stupid.
All I could think about was Deep Blue Sea.
It was very Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah, it was like right out of that movie.
But yes, let's get into it with where we think this game goes on our endless list of games. We have, right now, we have 1 through 18. Starts with The Legend of Zelda and right now ends with John Madden Football 1993.
Oh, okay.
You can
we'll
find,
have to play the other John Maddens to see
will.
Where they fall.
We will see where they fall, but you can find this endless list of games on our... Medium site. It should be in the podcast description if I do link it, which I probably will. It'll be in there. But you can find it. Just Google It's So Bad Endless List of Games. We add these games to the list based upon their contemporaneous gameplay, how they played at the time, how they play now, what their legacy is, graphics, visuals, audio, etc. By the way, the audio in this game is very good, audio design.
Yeah.
You can hear stuff coming, it scares you. The way it is directorially, it's really good. But let's start somewhere. Where do you want to start, and we'll go up or down?
So we're including, should we say that we're ranking the 2002 version?
Yeah, so we're going to...
Since it added a few things.
I think we're going to lump them all together in this one because there are all pretty much... I think yes, we'll base it on the 2002 version.
It's not like the graphics are that great.
I will say, though, the difference between the original and the remake, the original was a lot brighter than the original one, which was...
Dude, I played the remake, but That right. was a very dark, and you know, the shadows were
it was
great.
It was very like modern Resident Evil style. Like the old ones were very much the backgrounds were lighter,
right?
And everything seemed brighter.
And the that you say is like the cinematography kind of aspect to it. It just, I think it works super well.
It does.
This genre
like it.
And this game, I think.
And I think it only works with this kind of a genre, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because it might work in other genres. I kind of want to go back and play Dino Crisis, but it
doesn't. Dino Crisis. I love those games. Yeah. They were also very bright, though.
Right.
They were action games more than.
Parasite Eve, or actually, you know, Final Fantasy VII uses fixed camera angles. They don't do it as well, though.
Yeah. All the Final Fantasy, or
PlayStation,
7, 8, 9,
and even 10 does the
yeah,
same
true,
thing.
Yeah, true.
But so where
so,
should we
so
start?
Where do we start on the list?
What we're gonna do in this case, I usually ask you where we think we should put it, but we're gonna start at a level. We're gonna start at a game, and we're gonna go up or down depending on how we discuss it. So pick a place where you want
to
start.
I would like to. I think we can start at Hotline Miami 12 and go up.
Oh, this game is much more influential and better than Hotline Miami.
I love Hotline Miami, but I think this is better.
I think we should start much higher than that, actually.
Okay.
I think we
Where
should
start
at like River City Ransom and go up or down.
Okay.
And go up.
I think we go up.
Yeah.
All right, so River City Ransom is 6.
I think this game is way more influential, and I think it's a better game than River City Ransom.
I think River City Ransom has mostly nostalgia going for it. I think the game, it's a decent game.
It's
but
a good NES game.
I don't want to play River City Ransom. I played it like a couple months ago. I don't feel the need to ever play it again, really.
I think it's a better game than Cuphead, which is at number 5.
I think it is a better game than Cuphead. I like Cuphead also, but I think Cuphead nailed one thing extremely well.
Right.
And
it has tremendous visuals too, but
yeah.
I think it's still from a legacy perspective in terms of how it basically made survival horror into a genre. Resident Evil is a much better game.
Yeah, agreed.
So what about Mega Man 2? Would you rather play Resident Evil 2 or Mega Man 2? Or Resident Evil or Mega Man 2?
I've already played Resident Evil recently, and I would rather play Resident Evil again than play Mega Man 2.
I would also say that the legacy of Resident Evil is larger than the legacy of Mega Man 2.
Yeah.
And that's saying a lot, because Mega Man 2 has a large legacy.
Well, I think the legacy discussion matters more for Metroid.
Yeah.
Which is 3.
Yes. So I think, personally, that the legacy of Resident Evil is more in Resident Evil than, like, the survival horror elements that are in Resident Evil are more in Resident Evil than the Metroidvania elements that come out of Metroid are in Metroid. Do you understand what I'm saying? Sort of?
Kind of. Are you saying that Resident Evil is... It embodies its legacy, I guess, more so than Metroid kind of spawned a legacy.
Yeah, Metroid had some really cool ideas that people used and made Super Metroid, which was like the archetype for a genre, whereas Resident Evil was the archetype for the entire genre.
Right.
And I think that Resident Evil is also a better game than Metroid.
And I think so.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think it holds up much better than Metroid.
Absolutely.
I think it goes... Number 3, we can discuss. Do you think it... I don't think it goes higher than GoldenEye. Because GoldenEye is just... For me, I would rather play GoldenEye than Resident Evil right now. But I will say the first...
Would you? You're playing GoldenEye on an N64 controller.
I mean, do you want to play Resident Evil with tank controls? No.
Yeah, I did. I just did. It was great. I had a great time.
I think that the amount of fun that you can get out of the multiplayer in GoldenEye is way more than the enjoyment I get out of single player playing Resident Evil.
I guess so.
I'll also say that like the innovations that they made with the 4-player
local split screen. I mean, it kind of spawned like what became Halo kind of splits. I mean,
like,
Halo was like the next, I think you make a good point. To me, the legacy of GoldenEye is all in its multiplayer.
A lot of it, I would say, yes, but it's also like the first good console based first person shooter. It's like the first,
right?
So, and now, like, console FPSs are such a huge genre. They're kind of receding right now, but they're still, they sell millions of copies every fucking thing.
And I think, every time you say GoldenEye, like, people's eyes kind of...
Yeah, and it was...
But like, is it a good game?
Today?
Is GoldenEye in general, like, a good game?
I think so.
Is it?
All right. Yeah, yeah. I played that game a fucking shitload back in the day, and I when we put that on the list, I played that game a lot.
I think GoldenEye, I mean, GoldenEye is a pretty straightforward shooter. It's cool that GoldenEye had, like...
objectives?
Like, optional objectives and shit like that.
There were
like,
some... There were mandatory objectives, too.
No, yeah, yeah. I'm saying, like, but there were...
Like, bonus things. You
could branch out and do
and there was,
things.
Like, secrets that came out of it.
And the different difficulties really, I think, changed a lot of the AI and stuff.
Right.
I just think that Resident Evil is, despite it, I mean, you know, it's just a single-player game, but I think it's just designed almost impeccably.
It is designed really well. I think I still, look, this is a really tough decision.
Yeah.
This is really hard, but I think that the, if you look at from a popularity standpoint, from who,
right.
Like if I talk to somebody on the street, like yeah, you just said, GoldenEye is much more the thing than Resident Evil.
I guess the question is how much of it is a popularity contest, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I will say to you that I've played infinitely more hours of Certainly. GoldenEye than Resident Evil.
I never want to play GoldenEye again, and I can already say I've played infinitely more hours of GoldenEye.
Than you'll ever play of Resident Evil.
Probably, yeah.
And in the future, probably.
Okay. All right, so it's what? It's the new 3?
It's the new 3. Let's put it in there.
Okay.
We're putting... So this is great, though. We have Nintendo published. And we're getting number 3 now. Is a Capcom published game.
And it's
we're
officially...
We're slowly getting out of the Nintendo.
It's officially better than Metroid.
It's officially better than Metroid.
All right.
Officially. As of today.
As of today.
Better than Metroid. We cool. might change that in the future, but it is, as of today, our new number 3 is Resident Evil.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Matt, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Today. We're going to...
I'm going to go home and play Resident Evil 2 now.
Okay.
And just continue the saga.
You can follow us on the Twitter at It's So Bad Pod on Twitter. You can also email us your questions, comments, or concerns at itsobadpod@gmail.com. I just did that exact same thing at the very top of this episode. That's just funny. Thank you to Dos Chiquini Jr. for the music. DCC Jr. on Facebook. And this has been another episode. We're moving on.
See you next time.